ye coming back in here with dirty jerseys. I want to see ye coming back in here with bloodstained jerseys.
How could anybody go and sit and have a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
On Glastonbury last night on the television. This is our Glastonbury, Marty. Shoulder to shoulder, hip to hip. It's a rip-roaring contest. And listen to the 44,000. They're standing on their feet for the endeavour, for the courage, for the stickwork, for the hurling. It is a beautiful game. Marty, I watched the Killers on Glastonbury last night on the television. This is our Glastonbury, Marty. There's 30 Killers out in the field, but who's going to fire them the most shots that will win the game?
I said in the introduction, this was like the old days Roman Coliseum.
Yeah, it's all on the line now, Marty. There's a Munster medal to be won. There's an All-Ireland semi-final at plays. Everything is on the line. There's bodies going in everywhere. There's a realisation now that, lads, don't mind your quarterfinals. Don't mind your losing the Munster final. Let's go and go through the front door, get to a semi-final and be two massive matches away from winning the Holy Grail again.
John Milan, the words of John Milan, the man who loves his county from Waterford.
Sure, we had the Killers last night with Mr. Milan as well, right? You know, so unbelievable. Glastonbury.
He's a merchant, that fella.
He is. Big into Glastonbury as well. My God, huh? We ever over there, John?
It is a beautiful game.
This is our Glastonbury, Marty.
Powerful. Powerful John Milan.
Nobody like him.
Hello, welcome to the Three Man Weave, the Balls Out of the EGA podcast. Morris Brosnan here, delighted to be joined by Mick McCarthy as usual. Mick, what's sorry?
How are you, Morris? I'm buzzing for that Munster final now. Oh, wait.
And PJ Brown, a long awaited return.
Thank you very much, Morris. I'm buoyed by that John Milan performance there. That was Milan like turned up to 12, I think. I don't know where he goes if like Waterford winning All Ireland or something, yeah.
Yeah, and especially right, that game, for anybody who watched on telly, the start was a bit of a lull and the end just totally petered out. And yet if you listen to and there, sounds like the best game ever.
Yeah. And it was in the middle of the game as well. Like that was just after, you know, a minute or two after John McGrath's goal, which kind of equalized for Tip, and I think they were just taken over by the full stadium and the fact that we had this, at the time, close game and all. But I have to say, Milan is always highlight. Like, he's always brilliant whenever he's on RT Radio. It's always worth a listen. But if you add in Marty, and I'll be the first to criticise Marty Morrissey generally, but adding him into that dynamic, my God, it was brilliant. It was probably the most exciting. I was stuck driving for the game. I couldn't watch it live, and I listened to it on the radio, and my God, what an experience. It was absolutely fantastic. It felt like the best game ever. I was like, by the end of it, I was like, hold on, how much are Limerick ahead here? 12 points? This is way too much for how buzzed I am driving down the road here.
It was such a lethal weekend, right? Just on that quickly, because the amount of times when I watch someone do something this weekend, like, this goes back to my point, I always say it, that the game has never been operating as a higher level as it is right now. But the amount of times I was watching somebody do something at the weekend and thinking to myself, I wouldn't even dream of doing that. Like watching Keane Lynch's hand pass, or McDonald's spinning point, or Gary Brennan take off like a rocket to catch the ball. Like, this is stuff that you wouldn't even conceive in your head that you could ever do it. And to see so many people do it so regularly over the weekend, kind of like, they're the weekends you want to see. It's like action men nearly. We've got a jam-packed show coming up today. We're going to talk about all of the weekend's action. We'll look ahead to the qualifier draw. And John Conlon, Clare's John Conlon, is coming up on the show to talk about the hurling. A man who's been a loyal servant. He's probably above a servant, is he? He's Clare star.
In terms of his bracket. He's Clare star approaching Clare legend.
Is he? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, give him a couple more years. He's been there. Don't forget, like, John Conlon won the Under-21 All-Ireland in 2009 and has been a constant on the senior team since then, has developed his game, and last year had like the season. He was Clare's player of the year by a mile, and I think became kind of have someone that's been there a decade. I think people saw what he was made of on a kind of a consistent basis last year, and he became a national figure, you know, and won an All-Star obviously. But Conlon's been pretty much the main man in the forwards in various different roles over at least like the majority of that time when he's been there, you know. And there's been times when he's had kind of injury plague seasons. There was a year when he had a concussion that he kind of never got quite right from, and another time I think there was possibly a hip issue, I could be wrong on that, where he was there but couldn't really get going, and Clare massively suffered any time he wasn't in the team.
He's perfectly placed to chat to us today as well, PJ, because of he's obviously has the experience of working with Davey, and he knows both Limerick and Clare very well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm interested to hear from him. All right, on what I think kind of made Conlon last year was moving to the centre.
Yeah,
he kind of like it changed, becoming a central figure, and he was just got on so much more ball. And he's an incredible physical presence as well now.
Yeah. He was a wing forward for so long that was there to kind of win puck outs, but I don't know if it got the most out of him as a danger man, like, which is actually what he is, you know. So it's been a completely, and even then when he had a quiet couple of games, you know, early in the season this year, and you're thinking, oh, is there a bit of a hangover there? And he picked it up then, and obviously, like, Clare were in the end unlucky not to get out of Munster, and he was reaching top form just as they nearly did, you know. So there could have been more to come this year from.
That's coming up later on in the show, but we're going to start with the football. The qualifier draw, lads. A cracker of a qualifier draw, if I do say so myself. So we've got Cork against Laois, Meath against Clare, Cavan against Tyrone, and Galway against Mayo. Those games will be played this weekend. We might as well start with Mayo. Actually, we're going to discuss this game, but like after that game and this week, a lot of it is going to centre around Mayo and Mayo doing what they do and the praise that they deserve. But I do think it's worth pointing out or discussing Armagh firstly, actually, because I think I don't know as the team given us as much as Armagh have over the last 2 years. Like, I think it's totally underappreciated when you think about the Down game and the excitement of going to extra time there, both games against Cavan, this Mayo game last year, the game against Roscommon, which is probably the game of the summer.
Definitely.
The Clare game, Mick, when Clare looked like they had them bet until the last 5 minutes again
in the wind,
incredible excitement there. You think about, I know Mayo had a huge amount of injuries, but like Armagh were without four starters. Like James Morgan, who we talked about a lot on this and the influence he has. Stephen Sheridan is a huge loss as well. Andrew Mernon, like the stuff that they sent about him. Kennedy as well. And yet still they managed to evolve tactically. So again, go back to what we said last week. We said they can either press up really, really high or try and drop men back. But do they have the players to actually do that role? And McGeaney, as he often does, got it tactically spot on. So he started Reno Neal and Jamie Clark inside, used somebody like Stephen Campbell. I didn't actually think he could do this in that centre forward role, but he was going to track all day. And then he had like Nugent, Hall, Grugan work incredibly hard, especially Hall and Nugent. The amount of ground they cover is amazing. Like as a whole, that story, what he's gotten out of them, I know, you know, people would talk about his record in the Ulster Championship, but I actually think you need to take it in context and look at what he's given, not just this year, but the last 2 years, and the tactical evolution that he managed to do against a team like Mayo. And like Mayo could get full plaudits this week, but I think Armagh were equally as impressive and arguably just ran out of time at the end.
I think it's going to be interesting to see where he stays on for another year or not. I think he definitely should.
I agree.
It's
yeah.
like a clear improvement there now, and they've got a lot of really good, exciting young players that it would kind of break it up a little bit and possibly stifle their progression if he was now to leave.
When they went out last year in the qualifiers, people remember he was walked over to his family and decided to pitch, and it just very much seemed like it was Kieran McGeaney saying goodbye to Armagh, and people were surprised he stayed on. And then what he's done this year is start again, and it looks like that there's like last year it felt like the end of an era. This year it feels like they're only at the start of something. And you know, everything you've talked about there, the youth of the players, the fact that we've had two or three lads that weren't there last year that are now household names around the country, you know, after, you know, a lot of that goes down to the excitement of the games, a lot of it goes down to being on telly, but a lot of it goes down to their performance as well. So I think it just feels like he's built something there, and it's almost like you look at Armagh this year and you go, if they kick on the way they're supposed to kick on, you can't see them not being in the Super 8s next year. Like,
and even like, isn't there something to be said as well for like, well, metrics of success, yeah, but even like how much you enjoy watching Armagh and how much they seem to enjoy doing like Reno Neal doing John Cena celebrations. Like, you've all heard stories about other managers banning them celebrating goals, period, and he's doing WWE inspired stuff. Like, I find them an unbelievably enjoyable team to watch, and I think they've brought a huge amount to the last 2 summers in a kind of in an understated way.
Do you think McGeaney has mellowed a little bit, given that he's, you know, it's his first time where he's really dealing with a completely new generation? Like, he's at the stage now where he's like an old enough guy dealing with a load of kind of like 20-year-olds, yeah, you know, 21, 22-year-olds. And it's like suddenly there's that massive generation gap that probably makes him a different person than the manager that came through at Kildare when he was only retired a year or two.
Yeah, like yes and no. Like he definitely seems to have, and even, you know, I think their Kildare style was sometimes unblasted when he was there compared to, like, even the way they press, the everyone's, you know, talking about, oh, Mayo, typical collapse again. The amount of times that a Mayo attacker was waiting for a ball and Armagh defenders at the time, but sometimes they were forwards, was running for the ball, like running to intercept the ball at the same time. That's not a coincidence. Like, go back to the goal chance against Cavan as well, when Jamie Clark was pressing up really high and forced turnover Galligan. Like, this is, that's stuff that he's clearly working on. But at the same time, then he still has that bit of bite about him. Like, he, I don't know if you heard it, this BBC Northern Ireland interview with Oisin Langan. Like, he snapped. Like, Oisin Langan asked him a question, and Geezer's response was, isn't it funny when a journalist asks you a question and answers it in the question and nothing else? So, the other thing I want to talk about in this game, and we'll talk about Tyrone Kildare here as well, is sweepers, lads, sweepers. So Donaghy did it for Armagh, Boyle did it for Mayo, and Doyle did it for Kildare. And yes, you still have this thing, like, they're technically, they are, they look like sweepers, and yet in every single circumstance it's a centre back whose man has vacated him, so he's playing as centre back, just dropping slightly deeper. And then the issue I have with it is the analysis of it. So last night you get a scenario where on the Sunday game, Sean Cavanagh was looking at Tyrone running through Kildare. He's like, why isn't Owen Doyle coming out and defending these men? And it's like, that's not the job of the sweeper. Like, when there's a sweeper there, and I've played in systems with sweepers constantly, you still have to mark your man touch tight. If you lose your man, the thing falls to pieces, because then it's a one-on-one battling. And the point is that you can make it a two-on-one, or you can tag team it up. But when you're beaten,
block the route through.
Exactly,
the
yeah. But so when you're isolating the scenario, when there's a man running through the middle and like, why isn't the sweeper engaging him? It's already too late. Like, your defense still needs to do their job, and then you've got an additional 5% on top of that. It can't be the safety blanket every single time, because the whole thing kind of falls apart then as well. Even if it's just, as it was in all these scenarios, a centre-back whose man has left him, so he's able to hold that centre.
Yeah. I'm confused a little bit about the idea of a sweeper in general when no team plays six forwards. So there's always... Is there not necessarily three extra men at the back for all teams?
I think what is happening now is that what you've got is... These, like, what we call flyers, but effectively the position term, like, they should be termed as middle eight players, because they're not halfbacks or half forwards. Like,
yeah.
And Nugent and Hall, by the way, are the classic example of that in terms of the ground that they cover. Or even Keegan and Boyle for Mayo, by the way.
And it can include the spare man cornerback as well, like a Higgins or a Thomas
Sullivan. Or Owen Ben-Gallagher actually does it for Donegal. You've got those kind of your stock players. And then you've got, which is now, I think, of an out-of-date approach, which it looks like Tyrone have gone back to, which is picking a back as a forward and bringing him back, and he's a designated sweeper. But the alternative is the way that Armagh, Mayo, Kerry are trying to play Dublin did with Keane Sullivan, which is not having your centre back when that man drops off, because they will inevitably drop off to track back to their own 45 or to their own half anyway, that he holds the centre. So he becomes, so he's not like, that's why this term sweeper is probably outdated now.
Yeah, like, they're
not
what actually, I mean, really. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, like their job. The amount of times Donaghy's job was to instigate an attack, like, he's not necessarily a sweeper, he's kind of like a centre back, but maybe centre back is just the phrase.
Maybe. Could you coin another term which can distinguish what you were talking about from sweeper?
Like, because their job is different on both sides of the ball. Like, when they have the ball, the likes of Donaghy or Boyle, they're instigating attacks, like, or Paul Murphy did it with Kerry, not necessarily Jack Sherwood. So they're nearly like a kind of like a quarterback, but not necessarily. But then
I knew quarterback was coming at some stage. Yeah.
But when they don't have the ball, when they're dropping back, like, I think they are playing as a sweeper. I actually think, like, as an all-encompassing phrase, let's just go with centre back. Because
it's the current role of the centre back in the way, Gaelic football.
Centre back Nua.
Yeah, centre back 2.0. Yeah. So the draw that Mayo probably wanted least, they've gotten against Galway.
Definitely, yeah.
The draw everyone else wanted, though.
Although Galway Mayo matches have been pox for the last couple of years. It's still the match you want in the qualifier, because do or die. And have they ever played in a do or die game since the qualifiers came in? Not sure. I don't think they've ever played outside Connacht. But like, it's the draw we want, but I would worry about it being a bit dour, like.
Possibly. The Mayo are missing a lot of players now as well. They've shipped so many injuries.
Yeah, you're
like right. Keegan and Doherty definitely gone. I mean, on top of everyone else. And you wonder where Andy Moran is with him being taken off. Was he injured or was that a tactical substitution? I'm not sure. So going into this game, while they're obviously going to be in a good place after winning, but I don't know if they're a good place physically.
Yeah, although at the same time, I mean, the clamour has to have reached the Galway Clamp about the criticism they've gotten, especially from within the county, both like local media and fans, and also from outside. I mean, at the same time, with Damien Comer, they played around the club games after the kind of final in Galway, and he was on the bench for Annadown. Peter Cook with another weekend of games under his belt. You've got a couple of other people approaching back to full fitness. Malloy, obviously. Liam Silk looks like he's in a much better place now as well. I think there's absolutely no excuse. You talked about why these games are so bad before, Mick. And I think the reason that these games are so bad before is because Mayo try to mirror Galway. But if Galway go out and actually try and play a bit of football, or play a bit more of an expansive style of football, Mayo will absolutely, and they've shown that in the past, will absolutely try and mirror that, and it could become a cracker of a game.
Yeah.
So the only thing is, while I think every single sign pointed to Galway trying to change that way, except if they had to play Mayo, because their record playing that way against Mayo has been so strong that I think they will stay at type, and that, or even go withdraw slightly further, to be honest, play one up with Comer, bring everybody back. I wouldn't be one bit surprised if Ian Burke doesn't start this weekend, which would be like a tragedy, really, to not see him play. But I think if there was any other team come out of that draw, Galway might have changed, but I don't think it's going to happen against Mayo.
I remember last year when they beat them, and I think it was the third, was it four in a row Galway beat Mayo? I remember thinking, like, this is, I don't know who it was, and I'm sorry that I can't remember what pundit or journalist or whatever it was that was like, this is it now. Galway are just a better team than Mayo. They've beaten them four times in a row. It's a fact that they're a better team. And I remember like shouting at the radio, whatever it was, that's not the case. They're just suited to beat this team. It's a matchup thing. I don't think Galway are a better team than Mayo at all. But that matchup is so, so good for them. And I don't know what's changed. And PJ's talking about the injuries to Mayo. And like, are these lads that we saw, look, Horan was trying to bleed them anyway. Like, you know what I mean? We were talking on Friday's show about the experimental enough team that you're doing for a do or die game against a good team. He knows he needs to breed some new players anyway. But now it's like, are they good enough? We don't know. We have this isn't the Mayo team of 2016, 2017. It just isn't. Like,
speaking of a cracker of a weekend last week, this weekend, both of these games are going to be live on Sky Sports, a doubleheader on Saturday evening. So it's Tyrone and Cavan in St. Tiernan's Park in Clonus, and Mayo and Galway in the LRT Gaelic Grounds in Limerick.
Saturday night.
5 and 7 o'clock. Yeah, that's an absolute belter. Yeah. Fair play to Sky Sports for getting those two as well. Probably the footballing night of the year.
Frees me up to go to a certain match on Sunday then as well, without missing much.
Yeah, for Clare.
Yeah, Clare. we'll
move on and talk about Clare.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
We'll move on and talk about Clare, because somebody, I can't remember who, somebody on a Friday Guest the Handicast podcast tipped Clare heavily to beat Westmeath.
That was me.
And then, was it you?
Yeah, it was you as well, but it was... I was convinced, and then they only won by a point, but yeah.
Yeah, in exhilarating circumstances, or certainly sound like it on Clare Radio. Do we have much more to say about that?
I was going to say that Westmeath, probably unlucky in that they lost a lot of players early on. They lost Heaven to a black card. Then there was Ron O'Toole was injured, and Jerry Egan went off injured as well, which was pretty much like their forward line. Three of their best forwards are gone there. That definitely affected them badly.
Yeah, was that definitely a black card for Heslin? It was a late shoulder, but I don't know if it was... I don't know if it was cynical is the right word. I mean,
kind of letter of the law black card, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, like, can you really say like, it's kind of a black card, but not really. Surely it's a black card or it's not a black card. Like, yeah.
The one thing football referees have been good at even though pundits will always have it's too early in the game for that because they don't really like the black card, has been sticking to the letter of the law on that. We saw it with Peter Hart earlier in the year. And you can agree or disagree with the ideas, but I actually think football referees have been very good at just saying, a black card's a black card, whether it happens in the first or the 70th minute. Actually, they've got worse as the game has gone on, I find. They kind of stop giving them, maybe when subs are subs are wasted or whatever it might be.
I definitely seen a lot of games this year where I was wondering, hold on, is black card still a thing? Did I miss them taking and taking it out of the game?
Yeah, no, I give referees credit for consistency, for giving them no matter what time of the game, but whether they give them the consistency of their decision making. Like, there was a moment in the Cork Kerry game a couple of weeks ago where Brian Hurley took out a late shoulder, took out a Kerry player from a 1-2 and got a yellow card for it. And 20 minutes later, Paul Gainey literally did the exact same thing. It couldn't have been more of a mirror image. I got a black card for it. And it all ended up being the same thing for Gainey. He would have went anyway, like, as a second yellow. But it's just weird that the referee would somehow differentiate between those two things.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Gone off the track.
Can we talk about that for 1 second before we move on? We're going to get to John Connor in a second. But on that, it's time to bring people inside the curtain, right? Because whether it be this podcast or our rugby podcast, which runs during the rugby season, I've had a blanket rule on both.
Yeah, nobody pays any attention to your rules.
I hate talking about referees. And particularly after this weekend, there's been so much talk about Mark Deegan's performance in Casabar. And even the hurling yesterday, there was a lot of debate. The reason I hate talking about referees is because I always think about, A, it is the most tiresome conversation in the history of the GAA. Going back light years, like going back to Jim Carney.
It's the easy conversation as well. Like,
yeah. It absolutely is the easy conversation. And it's also the most unoriginal conversation because it's the same complaints over and over again. But the most important reason that I hate talking referees is because if that is how we boil everything down to, we're going to understand the game a lot less and the chances of progress. Like, I can totally appreciate why McGinley might have been so frustrated after that game. But say, for example, if they looked at their poor conversion, which has been a theme throughout the year, and we've talked about it a lot in this team, or if they talked about developing a bit more of a bench, or the kind of very easy manner that they conceded two goals, if that was his conversation, their chances of progress are infinitely more likely than if he obsesses with referees being not as infallible and things like that. And I can appreciate why he's frustrated in that scenario, but I think too often it's a get out of jail card for people to point at referees. Like, I remember, without getting into names here, like, I remember a manager resigning 2 years ago, an intercounty manager resigned 2 years ago, who had an appalling record with his team, and he resigned blaming referees. That's what he cited. He couldn't take it anymore because of referees. And it's like, the referees aren't the reason you're a Division 4 team, pal. Like, when you should be Division 2, there's a lot more to it than that. I think it's just too easy a get out of jail card, which is why I've met this rule.
I think, like, any criticism of referees is generally very unfair because it's an incredibly hard job.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you're trying to police 30 players,
yeah,
plus maybe the odd Mariska who comes onto the pitch.
Or manager.
Yeah. And, like, across a very large pitch in two very fast-moving games, especially hurling. Like, they do need two referees, but yeah, whenever you talk to referees, they will toe the GAA line on this and say, no, look, we don't really need it. You know, we're fine. We're grand. When I don't think they are really. Eventually it will, like, the GAA will bring in two referees, but in typical GAA fashion, they'll probably do it as a half measure where you have a referee in the second half of a game. we have two referees in the second half of the game because, you know, he'll be tired there now in the second half of the game. All right, fair enough. We'll give you two in the second half.
I don't know if that lambda, that'd be as crazy as a decision has ever been made, but, you know, you wouldn't put it past anyone. I don't disagree with you. You say I agree that it's tiresome, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I've never been to a Clare match that they've lost that was close where it wasn't the referee's fault. You know, like in the narrative in the pub afterwards or during the game especially, like, you can't, a free going the wrong way, possibly a bad decision, means the person is a cheat.
Yeah.
You know, or yeah, every other name under the sun. Like, you know, and all of that stuff is nonsense, right? And it's part of I agree it's tiresome, it's never going to change, it's just part of being a fan, right? But there's other parts of it, like, I think McGinley calling out the timekeeping element of it is important. That gets a discussion going because the timekeeping is a joke at the moment in GAA, and we talked about it earlier on in the year with the Kilkenny-Wexford
game. Yeah.
Galway-Kilkenny, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And there was a little bit of it in the Wexford game as well, but especially in the Galway-Kilkenny game, where Kilkenny were absolutely robbed by that, like, you know. And there's been a few more of them, and the it seems to be a completely random amount of time that's just given, and there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to it. Why can't we have a rugby-style system or a buzzer system in the that that's taken out of the referee's hands. They have enough people, officials at these games that could do that, right? The two referees thing, I think another discussion that's worth having is that it's a very frustrating, if you're in a terrace, especially at a hurling match, it's very hard not to get frustrated by watching a referee making a call. Two lads run out for a diagonal ball together, the full back and the full forward, and they both go down, and the referee guesses and gives a free either way. And it can literally go either way.
Yeah.
You know, and what happens generally is they do even themselves out, and they might not necessarily be the difference between winning and losing over the course of the season. But ultimately, we do play in what is kind of a short year where a loss defines it. And you can lose a couple of games because of referees. There's not really that much you can do about it. But I think having the discussions about fixable things are important enough. And the only way you can really do that is outrage. I think there's you know, it's the only way that gets the conversation going. There's far too much of it.
Yeah.
And it can, like, if I was watching the Leinster final yesterday, I would say that Kilkenny were very hard done by in a lot of the 50-50 decisions. I thought that a lot more of them went against them. I think it's a coincidence. I'm not questioning the referee. I just thought that a lot of them went against them. However, watching the game over 70 minutes, you thought that Wexford were a better team. Wexford were more up for it. Wexford probably would have won the game anyway. It's hard to make a big deal about a referee getting a few things wrong. As you said, it's a very hard job, like.
Yeah, and even just to, like, 2 points on that. One, I think, you know, Kilkenny could talk about the referee, or they could talk about the fact that they had 28 scoring chances on play and only converted 14 of them and had 12 whites versus 3 for Wexford.
Absolutely.
The other thing as well, though, I think those kind of specifics, if this conversation is going to continue, those kind of specifics that you just mentioned there is exactly how it should happen. Like, PJ, I know both of us were big fans of Barry Kelly when he was on the Sunday game.
And he was pretty good.
Yeah, the insight that he gave there. I think if they can, or even the way the Sunday game did the timekeeping thing last night, and they showed exactly, it was just, if maybe I just want more intelligent conversations than
those and less you're a bollocks.
Yeah, yeah.
No, well, in that case, like, I'm 100% with you. I don't disagree as much as you think I disagree.
Nobody counted us in all year. The media.
Where did this ferocious determination out there today come from?
The media.
Right, lads, 30 second whinge time, following up on what was a very ranty podcast last week. I'm going to go first.
Okay.
I want to add a clarification before. Speaking of unoriginal conversations, right? The reason
have
that.
You started?
No, I haven't.
Okay, you're using. This is filibustering.
This is just a quick clarification. Speaking of unoriginal conversations, the reason that we're not delving into the tier championships right now with the proposal that came out the weekend is because we have stuff up on site about that as well already. And on top of that, nothing new or original that we say in here is going to be added to all the stuff that's been already said. They can't even, they surveyed the players and even they can't agree. So yeah. I think whatever we say, but nevertheless, I'm going to reserve my contribution on this just to 30 seconds. Are you going to count me in, Mick?
Yeah, go ahead in 3, 2, 1, go.
I think the tier championships should be voted stone dead. I don't think they should allow them to progress at all because they do nothing to resolve the pressing issues within the association right now, which is resolving the club fixtures, guaranteeing more games for weaker counties, guaranteeing more coverage. Look what happened to the John McDonough Cup last week. They've promised them a huge amount and fixed it for the same weekend as a Munster final so that it doesn't get any newspaper space and it clashes, literally clashes with the television of another game. None of this stuff is going to be resolved in the proposal that came out the weekend, and because of that, this is only putting makeup on a pig, basically.
Oh, well played. 30 seconds on the money. I would say, just to agree with you there, I saw a brilliant tweet from somebody when it was arguing against the idea of a Tier 2 championship at all, with somebody saying why they should come in, and it's like, these proposals aren't for the building of the weaker counties because no law was ever written for the poor. And I think nothing surer has ever been spoken by these proposals, which also would, I would add into that, the current hurling structure that was brought in as a response to the super rates, which was rushed in, and this is a response to the two of those things, and all of them are to make the bigger counties stronger.
And but even, like, even the, at least the hurling tiers, there's some semblance of progress. They're not putting the money where their mouth is, clearly, but at least there, it's not a glorified Tommy Murphy Cup, which are actually making teams drop down after entering the initial championship. And the amount, I just can picture the drop-off rate in counties after that initial, when you drop down to a second tier, will be astronomical. I'm cheating here, and I'm going over my time. Mick, you're up.
You're also descending into tier championship talk.
I know.
You weren't going to do.
Yeah.
I just the other two of the podcast reserved the right to have a quick follow-up, but that's all that's done here. There's no need for a follow-up on my one. Am I good to go?
3, 2, One.
The John McDonagh Cup, this is nothing new. It was a seemingly brilliant final played yesterday in Croke Park. It was played between the Wexford Kilkenny minor final and the Wexford Kilkenny senior final. Wexford and Kilkenny fans in there, only there to support. They're not bound by being hurling fans. They're there to support their own clubs. Not allowed to leave Croke Park, basically trapped in there to watch it. That's not how you get people to support the competition. That shouldn't have been on the same day as the Leinster final. It shouldn't have been on at the same time as the Munster final, which every hurling person is watching. And it does nothing for the promotion of the competition or the teams.
Yeah.
Well done, Leash.
Slightly went over, but wholeheartedly agree with everything you said. I think it's a criminal shame that like Adrian Dunphy could score one of the best goals at Croke Park we'll see this year, and very few people are there to watch it. Or Killian Doyle, who put on an exhibition, lads. Like, if how's that man's back doing today? Because he tried to carry one team to think he was absolutely incredible, as he has been throughout the year, by the way. And I think it does, like, we're talking about promotion and exposure and players dreaming about playing for these counties, and that's the platform they're given. Like, what is that going to do for if the gay football team's in a similar scenario?
Yeah, trains packed coming up from Leash, like, you know, good luck messages, all that stuff. That's brilliant to see. That's their All-Ireland final. Let's treat it like that. If you want to put it on with the other, like, you know, maybe Croke Park is 2 days for the hurling finals instead of one. And even if there is only 10, 12,000 at the games, at least they're only there for that game. And it's not this kind of lads filtering in going, what match is this, lads? Is this the intermediate match? You know. I just think it does us such a disservice. It felt like such an afterthought. Like, sorry, right, PJ. I've spoken for longer than 30 seconds.
PJ, this is your 30-second winch debut?
It is. There should be like a clock on the wall here. I mean, like, I feel like I could make improvements to the 30-second whinch.
To the format.
You're more than welcome.
Put some kind of clock on the wall at least.
Okay, I'm going to count you in. 3, 2, 1.
I was in Kilkenny on a stag at the weekend from Friday to Sunday evening, and not one Kilkenny flag did I see in the city. It's a city over the entire 3 days that I was there. You would not know that there was a game on. The only black and amber in Kilkenny city is the pedestrian lights.
Oh, that's perfect. You're sorry.
There was a few lads in Kilkenny jerseys. Yes. Also, it might not have helped that I was hanging out in a very touristy pub where Americans were asking, how's the keeper supposed to save the ball and he's banging it 30 yards over the bar? That probably didn't help me taking
we're way
the
over
local flavour.
Yeah, it's actually remarkable. I've noticed that in Kilkenny before as well. Like, Leinster final, you know, you can't move in Wexford for purple and gold. Like, you know, you absolutely can't anywhere. You go across the bridge in New Ross, there's just Wexford flags the whole way. They're permanently there, like, you know. And I was passing through Limerick all the way through the game. As I said, I was listening on the radio. And every house, shop, pub, and whatever else is a church in Limerick has a Limerick flag outside it at the moment. And the streets, by the way, were deserted because there's no random people who aren't that bothered about the hurling. Every single person in that county, Mabbeyfield, Adair, all the towns you pass through on the way up from Kerry, all of them were absolutely deserted. Like,
it's about those four keywords: commit, focus, believe, and you can achieve. Carlo have achieved after 33 years in the wilderness, and well done.
All right, I'm delighted to say now we're joined by Clare hurler John Conlon. John, how's the form?
Not too bad, no. Keeping well.
Come here, we'll ask you about the weekend's action in a couple of minutes, but firstly, I suppose you've had a couple of weeks to think about it. Looking back on Clare's season now, have you been able to develop your own thoughts on it?
Yeah, look, it was, I suppose, a very disappointing season for us. Look, I thought we worked really hard, like I say, throughout the year, and you know, in, I suppose, the space of 7 days, we had two big massive losses, and things just didn't go right for us, I suppose, the way we wanted, and wasn't one for trying and wanting to succeed as a group. And then I suppose the most disappointing thing was we showed in against Cork, you know, I suppose we made a few changes to the team and you know, got it tactically right, I suppose, and it just shows you what we can do, which is probably the most disappointing when you woke up on the Monday and Tuesday and into the Wednesday then thinking like you weren't going to train anymore, and you know, just thinking of the little things that you can give that performance against Cork, and then why didn't it come out against Tip and Limerick? But look, I suppose as we kind of thought about it, yeah, like if things are going our way, we could be in Cork's position, but and it could have been a big springboard for the rest of the year, but things just didn't work out right. And yeah, it's just been very disappointing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. That's an interesting point because like there's probably two ways of looking at it. You saw a lot of fans, I thought, seemed to take kind of the silver lining from that final performance and the fact that there, you know, there was a response and that kind of Clare showed how good they can be. But at the same time, for players, it probably is equally as disappointing to know that that's what you have in you, but you didn't kind of get the chance to, I suppose, demonstrate it earlier in the championship.
Yeah, like we played Tip the first day and we put in a very good, strong first half performance against them. There was a very big wind in Ennis and we played against it. And at the half time, we were only 5 or 6 points down and we just said in the dressing room that we're in a very comfortable position. And then Tipperary came out in the second half and actually played a sweeper. And I know that the Sunday game had highlighted that we played it, but it, you know, it wouldn't have made sense for us to play it with. Seeing that we were playing with the wind and were kind of chasing the game. And then Tip, the ball bounced off the post, it's literally about 5 minutes after half time, and Tip then went from about 6 points up to 9 points up. And we always struggled then to try and get back into the game. And with the sweeper there, Padraig Maher sweeping back, and which he's very good at, we just couldn't get back into the game. And I suppose we were always chasing it. And then you know, the crowd gets anxious and we were trying to probably go for goal then with a lot of opportunities when you could have gone for points. And yeah, when you're just trying to chase it against a big team like Tip, we just struggled with that aspect. And you know, we eventually went to Tip one by about 11 or 12 points. And you know, we were very disappointed because Cusick Park is, you know, a place that we really love playing in. And we were disappointed to put in such a bad performance. And we would have found that we were in a great position, but then kind of let it slip. And then playing against Limerick, well, we came in very confident going into that game. We've, you know, I suppose, the last few years we played Limerick, we've come out on top, and would have felt that we had a great opportunity going in there. And we kind of look again. They came with a massive intensity and ferocity, and just blew us off the field, to be honest with you. And you know, it was very disappointing that day as well. And then leading up to the Cork game, yeah, it was, you know, people got very agitated towards us, and like, you know, that we weren't performing, and that it was a disappointing season. But in fairness to the management and in fairness to ourselves, we met on the Monday night and we just said that we were going to put in a massive performance against Cork, and just spoke about the things that had gone wrong for the two previous weeks and terms of the way we probably set up and different things like that. And we come out with a massive performance that day, which you could see every player was just willing to work hard. And look, we got a great start, Shannon Donnelly got a great goal, and because we didn't get those against Limerick and Tipperary. We had two or three opportunities against Limerick in the first half and we missed those goal opportunities. And when you're in those positions, you need to take those goal opportunities to win games. And I suppose against Cork, we took the two goal chances that we got. You know, there are little things that change games and change momentum and even change that mindset and get the crowd in behind you. It's all about these different little inches, and I suppose they didn't run for us this year.
John, you kind of alluded to it there about the criticism that came your way after the Limerick game in particular. And I know that it was something that your communications officer, Mark Dunphy, had something to say about personal kind of criticism of the players after all that you guys have given to the county over the years, being something that kind of really hit home and really, I suppose, hurt in between the Limerick and Cork games. I'm just wondering how much of an impact that had on you guys and how much you thought about answering back that against Cork, and whether it was this kind of, like, you know, over the top personal criticism, really.
Look, it's sport. I suppose when you're playing at this level, you have to be open to this criticism. I suppose after the year we had last year, we had a very good year. Would have opposed the way from getting to an All-Ireland final, and it would have been a massive thing for Clare Hurling. And I suppose people expected that from us this year again. We got a great start against Waterford to go down there and win was a big result for us, we thought. And yeah, we were just very disappointed with the two games that followed that. We thought we were going very well going into them. But look, you know, people are going to criticise when you take those two big beatings, and I suppose rightly so. You know, we can't give those performances and expect people not to criticise us. And it was just the level that it was maybe targeted at, that you know, given out about management and different players and different things like that. And
did you feel that it was unfair, though, especially when things like effort and caring comes into the conversation? I suppose it's the usual hurlers on the ditch thing, but, you know, it is fair enough to criticise a team's performance or not playing up to their level, but when it becomes this kind of thing about whether you care enough or whether you're trying hard enough, that becomes a whole different matter. And I don't know whether this was something that got to you guys, and, you know, perhaps rightfully so.
Yeah, like, just even in terms of the Limerick Tipperary match yesterday, I was in it and joined at the game, and like, I have a cousin alongside me, and he would have been critical of our effort, we'll say, after the Limerick game, and, you know, he said, "You didn't even hit a bad belt," like, and I was like, "Well, do you want us to sit out in the stand alongside you?" You know, I don't understand that kind of mentality. Then with, you know, 2 or 3 minutes to go, like, the game is up. You know, the Tip lads weren't doing the same tackles and following the same with the same intensity. And I suppose Limerick were just scoring for fun then at that stage, because the crowd is, you know, massively in behind them. And I just turned to him kind of with the line that he gave me after the match, saying that, you know, they're gutless, you know, messing with him, like, kind of, and he just laughed at me, like, because that's what I got after the Limerick game of him, like, you know, and that. You know, they've given up, they're heartless, like, you know, but it's just a cliche that everyone kind of comes out with when a team is massively on top. And you saw that yesterday, like, the Tip lads gave it everything. Limerick, I suppose, got a tactically better and got their matchups better and then got on a run. And so it's very hard when there's 40,000 people in a stadium and someone has a run in you to try and change it. And you know, like, I felt sorry for the Tip lads near the end. You know, it was just, the game was up, and the last 10 minutes was just kind of damage limitations on how can you keep down the score. And then, you know, and when those shots start going over from out near the sideline, and you know, it's just very hard to change. And as you know, that's the old mindset of, you know, kind of thinking, well, he didn't give us a dirty belt, like, you know, but I don't understand, you know, what that's going to do for anyone. And then if you get sent off, they're going to be given out about him more. So, yeah, look, that was the disappointing thing. But look, we used it, I suppose, as a push on for the Cork game.
John, I'm fascinated to know what you think of looking at Limerick. Like, at the weekend, we were talking to Shawnee Tobin, who drew parallels with this Limerick team and the Clare 2013 team. And obviously, Joe O'Connor and Paul Kinnerk are gone in there as well. But in terms of their kind of their physicality and their movement, and even their kind of running lines and things like that as well, there seems to be a lot of similarities. How impressed are you have been of both this kind of iteration of Limerick and their kind of their body of work over the last year or so?
Yeah, like, massive credit has to go to their management team. There's a lot of Clare men involved there, and they must be bringing some. There's Alan Cunningham as well, and Angus O'Brien from Brawford, and Shannon, and they've all seemed to work very well together with John Kiley and the rest of the backing team. And they have a very good plan, and they stick to it, and they're just keeping their defence very compact, and no one really goes out of line. And anyone that does is kind of, you know, taken off really quick. So William O'Donoghue has brought a big work ethic to the middle of the field, and you have Keane, who's kind of, you know, has that bit of flair to him that they need, and to have forward line working back and their full forward line just working with massive intensity. But they're all well able to take scores as well and get up and down the field, and then they have a fantastic bench thing to bring on, which about 15, 20 minutes to go, which adds another level to their game. So, look, I'm very, very impressed by them. They're also All-Ireland champions, which gives them that bit of confidence and drive to push on in games. And they have a massive crowd in behind them. They're on a crest of a wave at the moment, and look, they'll be very hard to stop.
I'm curious, like, from us looking from the outside in at a team like Limerick, they seem to be quite stuck or rigid in terms of their game plan, and they seem to, you know, they don't necessarily seem to manipulate it much game on game. Like, it's very clear that, you know, as you mentioned there, that half hugely savage working half forward line and a really sticky full back line, a lot of industry in their middle of the park as well, and then people like Galan on the edge of the square. But when you're looking in, I mean, you obviously understand this to another degree than we do. Do you see variations in this Limerick game on game, or even from this year compared to last year, that we might miss?
I just think that their half back line is a lot more like they're not being dragged out, not being pulled out. The one time they've lost this year, we'll say, I don't know, not taking into account the last Tipperary game because I didn't see it, but and maybe it was kind of a dead rubber game, but the Cork game, it was the one game that kind of Limerick got stretched, that, you know, Cork were using the 10 and 12s as their outball, and you have Seamus Harney in, who kind of plays more as a kind of old centre forward. He kind of holds his centre line. He kind of plays in the between the 50 and 65, and drags you left and right. So, Declan Hannan loves to sit, and he's kind of their kind of outball coming out and playmaker, and he plays it out the wings, and where Cork are that kind of team that come with, you don't know what Cork are going to come with, and they could be, they're the one team that from playing against them, it turns into a shootout, and whoever's better at the shootout is going to win the game. And I think Limerick are very tactically driven. They're very well coached, from Paul and them, and from seeing that firsthand, there won't be any stone unturned, and look, they'll be very hard to beat this year. But we'll see what happens.
I know you mentioned Clare's performance against Limerick and what you guys probably were looking at, but in terms of what they came up against, given Clare's recent record against Limerick and the 13-point win I think it was in last year's championship, and the general good record against them, when did they offer anything that you guys weren't expecting this year, or when you played them in the Gaelic grounds, or was it like, do you think that they've improved to a level in the last 12 months, or does that just come from a day where everything went right for them and everything went wrong for you guys?
I suppose if we had our way back, as a group, we kind of told our half back line to follow their half hour line, thinking that was kind of that was kind of their main area of threat, and it was kind of one thing that we didn't do last year against them in Ennis. So if we had our way back, we'd probably have had our half back line back a bit more, and then got our half hour line out to kind of meet them and see who can win that middle third then. But that was the big difference in what we kind of did. But I couldn't get over their intensity, their work rate, their use of ball was under pressure. They obviously seemed to have an extra man in on the overlap, and even you see there yesterday against Tipperary, they must have played two or three passes over their shoulder kind of into space without even kind of expecting a man to be on the run into it, and I think they got a pint, two or three points off it, and it was just great to see the vision that they're kind of seeing and getting used to each other. And because what that goes with, there's very much little change to their team over the last two or three years. In the last 2 years, the same 15 years, he kind of goes out in the field, bare chain, one or two changes, and the same kind of subs come in every day. So it's a very much settled team that is very much kind of buying into everything that their management is asking for them. And then obviously the massive confidence levels that they have. And if they can bring that work rate and intensity like they did yesterday, it'll be very hard to stop them as the year goes on.
We might ask you about the Leinster final in a second as well, John, and obviously you've plenty of experience of working under Davy too. But just before we get to that, you mentioned the sweeper that it had been perceived that he played against Tipperary, and we were actually talking on sweepers earlier in this podcast in relation to football. And I'm curious, to your mind, what is the job of the sweeper? Because we kind of see it as twofold. Like, we go back to the Galway Clare game last year, and when it looked like Clare swapped the sweeper, that was in terms of their use of possession improved massively. But then you have other scenarios, and I think you would be particularly familiar with this, where a sweeper is just there to cut off supply to that inside line. Like, when you look at it now, whether that be Wexford or what was perceived to be what you did, what do you define the role of a sweeper as?
I think his role, as you said, he's your outball kind of coming out of defence. I think he has to be a kind of a guy that's well able to use possession and be good in possession. Like Kevin Foley has kind of transformed that role for Wexford this year. Very good on the ball. But then also, like, it's not alone a sweeper. He has to be able to see when he can attack as well, you know, and I think Wexford have done that very well. And then also, obviously, be able to cut out, kind of read the game and cut out where the ball might be going and help out the defence because, especially when you have a sweeper, you know, the cornerback can all he has to do is get it to ground and get the ball down where I think I would have been very critical of the Kilkenny sweepers, the Park Walsh at times. He was going off, you know, they were showing in the Sunday game last night that Wexford targeted kind of hitting the ball down the middle and so that's where Park Walsh can't be going off for the high ball. That's what, you know, Wexford wanted him to do, where he had to stay down and read the break and be the last line of defence if he was, you know. So I think that's my opinion on the sweeper. He's the guy that stays down. He's the man that protects the D and defence and the big D and kind of is about 25, 30 yards out and just cutting out those deliveries into down the wings or down, you know, cross field ball. So, and getting to the breakdown and covering the goal, you know, the goal threat. That'd be my idea on a sweeper if it's there. And like you can see Wexford, you know, kind of do that to a kind of tee. So, yeah, that'd be my opinion on a sweeper.
That's really interesting. We actually were talking about Sean Finn recently and about the fact that, you know, when you watch somebody like him defend, he kind of seems to either time it perfectly, whether or not he's going to compete with somebody in the air or try and feed off the break like a good cornerback should, I suppose. But I never really thought the fact that a sweeper actually needs to commit to, you know, one or the other. Like, I presume in the case of somebody like Park Walsh, that's what's going through his head as a normal defender, whereas if he's playing that kind of designated role, he needs to read that he needs to be on the edge of the breaks, I suppose.
Yeah, like I would have looked at the game yesterday. And I was watching here with one of the lads from that we were at the Munster final, and we came home and we saw the White Leinster final then, and we were just kind of saying like that there was one or two balls that he needs to be cutting out, that he was too deep, like that he was nearly in behind or alongside the fullback. So really, the full forward all he's do is make the run with the fullback, and the sweeper's kind of out of play then. So he must be the man kind of sitting, we'll say 5-10 yards in front of him, and either cutting it out or else being there as an assist to the cornerback who's trying to break it in behind or to break it in front to the sweeper who can react a bit quicker because he's no marking him. And then especially for puckouts, like he should not be going up for puckouts. He should be the man staying down and either getting the break in behind or else being that we'll say out ball again, as we'll say, if his team wins the ball, that they're he's able to play it back into the play it back to the sweeper who has the vision then to spray it throughout the field.
Yeah. Before you go, the man who is viewed to be nearly the proponent of the sweeper or perceived to be in some places is obviously Davy Fitzgerald. You've plenty of experience working with him. Just quickly on that, I thought it was interesting to hear Rory O'Connor speak after the game about the belief that Wexford lacked, that he said, you know, they never doubted that Davy believed in them, but some of them might have doubted their own kind of ability, and it was him that instilled that. Like that process as a manager, have you any insight as to how Davy actually does that?
Yeah, well, he turns any negative that's given towards you, like as a team, into kind of a positive that that's your everyone kind of against us mentality. And look, it's a good way to do it. I know that somebody come out recently giving out about the sweeper system in Wexford, but you've seen what he's done since he's gone down there. They've become very competitive, like massive competitive, and you know they're playing with a very good style this year. Kevin Foley has added a big difference to their, you know, their, let's say, the sweeper system. He's very comfortable in the ball, and he's also an attacking threat in another way. He's good at reading the game. And then also Sean Murphy, who was their sweeper last year, has really relished in as a defensive, let's say, mindset, as he's a very good defender. So you know, those little changes that Davy has made a massive difference to the team. And the big thing is, I suppose, the expert are you know, they've finally found a free taker. You know, Lee Chin got 100% success rate yesterday, and you know, at this level, that was probably their downfall for the last few years. They had no real free taker, and they were going from player to player. And you know, at this level, you need to be getting 100% free, you know, nearly scoring 100% every day. So, if that's not happening, your margins are so thin that That's going to be the difference between winning and losing games. And also, look, Wexford only hit two wide, just I think in comparison to Kenny's 11. So they were very efficient in what they did, and that's the way, you know, Davey will work. You know, you have to use the ball very well. You don't shoot until it's in, you know, that scoring zone, and you know, Davey will give you massive belief. You know, he's a very charismatic character, and he's over you, like he'll do anything for you. And you can see that in the Wexford players. They have massive time for massive respect, and the lads he brings with him are very, very, very astute people in the background. And you know, there's a big carload of Clare lads going down there every few nights. So he's a great bunch of people around him. And even saw Gazzy, who would be our old kit man, in the picture yesterday when on the pitch when they won. And it was great to see people like him and Mike Curry and Saoirse Gulfin that I would have seen giving a lot of time to us in Clare, coming out on the right side with Wexford, and look, it's great for hurling. And this year they're the only unbeaten team so far this year in the championship. So they'll take massive confidence. They're used to, I suppose, being in tight games with the three big draws they had in Leinster, and they're used to that scenario now. So if they won't fear anyone in the semi-final, they'll probably be underdogs again, and Dave, you'll love that, and you'll cherish that. And look, they'll have a big crowd in behind them. They're on a run, and who knows? You know, they could be very easily in an All-Ireland final, and they won't fear anyone.
Definitely not. John, before you go, I'm just wondering, is there any talk in the Clare Hurlers WhatsApp group about anybody going back to the footballers when they beat Meath and go into the Super 8s next week?
I don't know. I wouldn't know much about football now on this side, but I wish them all the best. It was a super win for them, and look, they're a great bunch of lads, and we'll be all in behind them now the weekend going to wherever it's on. So looking forward to, hopefully they'll be getting into the Super 8s, because it'll be great for the county. And you know, they've had a massive success over the last number of years, and a lot of credit must go to Cullum Collins, in fairness to him, for the work he's put in. And you know, he's had a massive, as I said, transformation, and even the number of players that have gone through his reign. And that's fair play to him, because he's brought the standard of football in Clare up to a massive level. And look, we'll be on and behind them at the weekend, and we'll travel up, and hopefully they'll give a massive performance and get into the Super 8.
Savage stuff from John there. Can I just go briefly elaborate on something he said there? Because it's actually, it's funny, I wrote a piece about this on Sunday, talking about Limerick and the influence of people like Joe O'Connor and Paul Kinnerk, right? And so for those who haven't read it, it's up on site, and it's a piece with Shawnee Tobin talking about the transformation, the kind of phenomenal transformation in the physique, and but also the technical abilities. It wasn't just in terms of them getting bigger, it was how they were improving as hurlers, both as athletes and hurlers, like a really nice marriage that the Limerick Development Programme has created. And Shawnee gave a couple of really unbelievable insights, actually. But one thing he said was that it all changed for them with Clare in 2013, when Clare won that All-Ireland. And he actually drew parallels. If you look at the way that Clare team moved in terms of how hard they worked, their physicality, there's a huge amount of parallels with the Limerick team from last year. And a lot of that is down to their strength and conditioning coach, Joe O'Connor, and their backroom team member, Paul Kinnerk, who obviously John Kiley took from Clare to Limerick. And just on that team, like, I actually think it is indicative of where the game is going, because this Limerick team embody all of that. Like, in terms of, you know, there's really nice marriages both between their physicality and their technical ability. There's a really nice marriage in their backroom team between a strength and conditioning coach and a guy like Paul Kinnerk, who can make game-specific workouts. And, you know, Shawnee talked about the fact that, like, you look at Clare in the 90s. Clare in the 90s used to do these savage training sessions on the hill, and then they'd go into Ennis, into the Sherwood Inn, and they'd have, like, Fanta and ice cream. And, you know, people used to look at that and kind of balk at it. But last year, like, Limerick are doing these savage sessions as well, but John Kiley has got an ice cream van coming down to the Gaelic grounds, and there's a nice happy marriage between kind of leisure and activity. And similarly, he's got their rest periods perfectly worked out, so that the fear of burnout or any of that stuff is totally taken off by this Limerick team. And I feel like that is, like, that's where teams need to get to now. It's the same thing with Dublin. Like, Dublin have invested heavily in strength and conditioning with people like Brian Cullen and things like that as well. But it's not just that. Like, it's a marriage between that and their playing staff, and everybody kind of singing off the one hymn sheet, like a blueprint.
Smart training.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. And, you know, I think as Shawnee might have said this, or me or Shawnee had said, you know, it's in a word, it's balance. Like, that's what it is. And Limerick right now, I think the two of the best teams in the country, actually, Dublin and Limerick, embody that.
Yeah. It goes to everything they do as well. Like, you're talking about their using Clare as a blueprint, but the most important thing is that they don't just do that. They also have that bit of skill and everything. And if you look at the difference, say, what's the difference while this Limerick team are better than the Clare 2013 team? And it's they can do all the same things, but their distribution is so much better.
That's exactly what Shawnee said, yeah.
Yeah, and it's that they find those passes. And do you know what happens then is that Kyle Hayes or Keane Lynch don't go missing from the game in the way Tony Kelly does. And that's not Tony Kelly's fault. That's because Clare backs aren't getting worthwhile possession that can bring the middle line players into the game, as opposed to just hitting it out to the wings or to the full forwards. And Limerick, if you think of Limerick yesterday, think of how much ball Casey Mulcahy and Galan got inside. Think of how much ball Hayes and Hegarty in particular got, and probably to a lesser extent Tom Morrissey. And Tom Morrissey was on the ball. I haven't got the possession stats, but I would imagine it's in double figures. You know, that's their six forwards. There's very few teams in the country who can match that. You know, look at the way Bubbles disappeared out of the game for significant periods of time while having, and you know, what looks statistically like a good game. You didn't see him for large quantities of the game, you know. So just, I think it all goes back to what you're saying, but it's just finding, it's not forgetting the hurling part of it.
Yeah.
And that's been the biggest problem with nearly every team that's gone big on strength and condition in history.
Yeah, and that's the premise of the article, really, and of Shawnee's point on what Limerick are doing right now. Is the fact that, like, that he actually made a point that we'll definitely get Shawnee in the podcast at some stage, because his analysis was brilliant. But he made a point that if you look at, like, this obsession with systems right now, like system structures, when John Kiely came in, his system was work rate. But he didn't mean that in, like, a cliched way. He meant, like, in essence, if you look at what they're trying to do, like, they have it choreographed to get Galan in space by you having a half forward line, and their job is work rate, to work between the 45s. That's where they thrive. They vacate that space in front of him. It was against, like, you saw this with Donal O'Cusack's analysis against Clare, it was to the right. Against Cork, it was to the left, and he'd make the vast majority of his runs to that one side, and it's oftentimes just, you know, one touch turn over the bar. That's both because he's a fantastic hurler, but also because he's got a block of training done from when he was 16 to now, where that physicality or that training gives you an extra half yard of pace, so you're out in front of your marker, and then the hurling kicks in after that, and you can turn and fire the ball left or right shoulder over the bar is no problem. But the entire thing is just, it's a perfect balance between all those different aspects that Limerick and John Kiely especially, I think, have managed really effectively.
I have to say, I didn't see them hammer and tip yesterday, and I think, like, I had Limerick as probably just about the favourites, but I was thinking Tip and Cork are in there for me, and I didn't know what to expect from the Leinster teams once they come out of Leinster. We'll still see. But Jesus Christ, that was some mark earlier yesterday, and you're kind of thinking they're at full cylinder here without us ever realising that they got to that place, you know, and they're going to be hard stop. Like,
did that game yesterday, you were thinking early in like the first half, early in the second half, you're thinking, God, this has turned into a classic here, especially around time John McGrath got that goal. But then, like, in the next 10 minutes, Limerick blew him away. Like, they went from, 113 to 210 after McGrath's goal, to 11 minutes later, Limerick were up by 6. And that was after...
What a response, yeah.
That was what a response. And they moved even further away after that then. They just blew him away in that 10 minutes there.
Yeah. And performances all over the field as well. Like, you've been talking about Sean Finn since he came into work today, and how good he was. Yeah, like, you know. But it went from Nicky Quaid all the way to Peter Casey's best ever game for Limerick. And it's like, that's 1-15, not even bringing in the bench, who, to be honest, by the time the bench came in, the game was over, because they did it, as you said, in that 10 minutes between 45 and 55. Like,
maybe
just
a little bit lucky with Nicky Quaid's save coming, like the ball that came off the Callan's shot that came off Nicky Quaid's foot. I don't know how much he knew about that. Getting a lot of credit for it.
Yeah.
I would say that's a bad finish. Seamus
Callan scores that. If he has that position another 100 times, he scores 100 times. Like, Ger Cannon called it as a goal.
Yeah. Callan doesn't admit these. Oh, wait, yeah.
95% of the time when the ball hits the keeper's legs and it's hailed as a great save, it's generally a poor finish. Like, yeah, the classic example was the Galway Wexford earlier this year when Callan came out and saved with his legs, but it was also a very poor finish.
Yeah, it's a good save and a poor finish. But, like, while we're on the team of goalkeepers, the three man weave as a podcast, and I'll do it on behalf of myself and on Mark Farley, would like to officially apologise to Tipperary goalkeeper Brian Hogan. On Friday, we made the declaration, basically, that Liam Sheedy should cop on, leave Brian Hogan out, bring in his father, Ken Hogan, as a replacement.
That was a suggestion on Friday's show.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we had a lot of basis for that argument. Basically, Brian Hogan had cost Tipperary the fake Munster final on the PlayStation 2, and with a calamitous performance that people can see on Facebook and YouTube if they want to go and look for it. Now, possibly the worst goalkeeping performance in history. But, you know, Liam Sheedy decided to give him another chance on Sunday, and, you know, Tip might not have played well, but Brian Hogan certainly did. He made one of the greatest saves of the history of the Munster final, and, you know, we didn't have faith in him, but I'm glad for his sake that Liam Sheedy did, and I'd like to apologise on behalf of myself and on behalf of the podcast.
I'd like to disassociate myself from those comments because I wasn't involved in that game or that discussion.
Tip are now on. The Tip are like England in the World Cup last year now. They're on what you could say is the easier side of the draw.
They have a great route. Yeah.
I mean, it is. They're going to play either Dublin or Laois and Wexford. Dublin or Laois in a quarterfinal and then Wexford in a semi-final if they're to win that. I mean, they would fancy themselves to win those games.
Speaking of, final point on hurling. We're going to chat some more hurling on Friday because there is hurling this weekend. But the final point on hurling is that we heard a lot on our live show down in Ganovas about waiting in the long grass. And Cork, who nobody's talking about after this weekend, will go the exact same route that Limerick had last weekend.
So they could end
up,
last year.
And could end up coming up against Limerick in a semi-final.
Yeah, again.
Again, in similar circumstances to last year, and beating Munster finalists there. So
they have to get by Kilkenny first, though.
I'm saying Cork are... Cork are waiting in the tall grass.
That's what Lark Corbett said, yeah. So Cork are there, but I agree with PJ that, like, it's actually not disrespectful to Dublin or to Wexford to say that Tip will be delighted with that, because if they fancy themselves as winning in All-Ireland, they're the teams that they'll have to get by anyway. So it's like Wexford could easily beat Tip. Like, and I think Dublin could as well. Like, I'm really looking forward to that game now. But, you know, can you see a Limerick-Tip final? Like, it's and Tip aren't going to play for 50 minutes this time if that happens again. Last point on hurling, though, because before you go, is that I don't think we can end this show by not talking about a Brian Cody team absolutely capitulating under pressure and making some of the weirdest decisions I've ever seen. So there's 5 minutes to go in a game, you're down by 3 points, and you got a free in, and they start going for goals. You wouldn't do that in football, really, never mind in hurling. Like, yeah, absolutely crazy. Like, I actually couldn't believe it that a Brian Cody team would make these, and because it was Owen Murphy taking the frees and all, that was coming from somewhere. These weren't like on-field decisions, or at least they weren't individual decisions anyway. If they were on-field, they were group decisions. And I actually genuinely couldn't believe it. There were scores there for Kilkenny to have. They could have at least got it back to a draw. And for them to do that kind of white line fever, weird sort of, we've never been here before, we need a goal, I actually couldn't get over it. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever seen from an experienced team with a legendary manager.
But doesn't it go to show, just, this is our final points before we go. Doesn't it go to show the incredible pressure that Wexford seemed to bring now? Like, unsurprisingly, they led hooks and tackles in this game. You could nearly see how Kilkenny were kind of cracking under pressure slightly. I actually think that this is the second year in a Leinster final that Kilkenny will be kicking themselves. The draw game against Galway last year, I think, was the same in the circumstances. They let Galway come back into that game after Galway let Kilkenny first come back into the game as well. But again, it's the pressure that Wexford seemed to apply relentlessly throughout the game. Like, this just seemed to be so loved and epitomised by somebody like Matthew O'Hanlon, who just loves close quarter contact and all that brings.
I do wonder with this.
One more point, PJ. Come on, it's hurling, for God's sake. We can talk about it all day.
Wexford did win a Leinster final here. We might well talk a little bit about Wexford. I'm going to talk about a little bit negatively here, though. I do wonder if it was great to see them win, especially as I was in a flagless Kilkenny, and I could see how much the Wexford actually appreciated it. Is it a repeatable performance? They had three wides in that game.
Fair
point. I do wonder, it wasn't because they were just like taking good shots, lot of those points, they were like really long range points.
Dermot O'Keefe got a point from the sideline that was just magical. Now, I think he had a free in at the time, but you know, those, they are low percentages. Like,
The Lee Chin hit some bombs, like monster frees as well. And that was probably the best game I've ever seen Lee Chin have in terms of like consistency. He was in that game for 70 minutes, whereas usually he comes in and out of games so badly. He talks about it himself as being like his biggest flaw, that he could play for 10 minutes, you might not see him for another 20 minutes. And he was pretty much flawless from freeze. Will he, like, if they're going to win a semi-final, he'll have to have a day like that again. Wexford will have to step it up a level. And I just kind of feel like they were playing to their max in that game.
Croker suited them though, and it did actually suit their style, like, you know, and they just seem to score easier than they do in the other games that you usually see. And I predicted on the show on Friday that Kilkenny would just wear them out with points, and it's exactly how it would have happened if Wexford weren't keeping up with them, you know. And they're not out of Croker anymore now this year if they're going to go through. So I wonder. And look, but I think you're right though. Chin, O'Connor, and McDonald all had huge games. They're the three big forwards. You have to have the three of them all play well. Like.
And the good thing for Wexford fans is that by the time they finish this podcast, the semi-final has started. Lads, we'll be back with you on Friday. There's a huge rivalry heating up for, I guess, the Handicast podcast. In the meantime, take it easy.